Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for Tuesday, July 11th. I'm Alan Chartok. The Iraqi government has declared victory over the Islamic State terrorist group in Mosul. I'm so sorry. While the group is among those still involved in the Syrian conflict, meanwhile, U.S.-Russian relations remain under scrutiny following a recent meeting between Presidents Trump and Putin. Here to discuss all of this is Dr. Jim Steiner of the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy at the University at Albany, a real expert. We want to hear from you. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Your calls and a lot more, emails and anything you want to send at us at voxpop@wamc.org. Coming up after this news. Well, hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WNC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. The Iraqi government has declared victory over the Islamic State terrorist group in Mosul, but the group is among those still involved in the Syrian conflict, along with the U.S. and Russia. Meanwhile, U.S.-Russian relations are under the microscope again after a recent meeting, you can say that again, between Presidents Trump and Putin. Here to discuss all of this is Dr. Jim Steiner of the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy at the University at Albany. Jim is the school's program coordinator for Homeland Security, Cybersecurity, and Emergency Management. He served in the CIA from 1972 to 2005, focusing on Soviet defense and economic issues. In the 1990s, Jim served in the State Department as special advisor to the ambassador at large for Russia and the former Soviet studies. Hey, Jim, we couldn't have a better guy than you on the air today with everything that's going on. Maybe you could just sort of sum up what you're coming away from with this whole Russia thing.
Okay, I'm delighted to be back again, Alan. So let's start with the meeting at the G20, the meeting between Trump and Putin. Without a doubt, this was a victory for Putin, and Trump came away with essentially nothing. Putin has a checklist. He was well prepared. He was well staffed. He got the U.S. To go in jointly with them on a plan for Syria that has a partial deconfliction zone. This may be the only thing that might get a little bit of credit for Trump. On the other hand, I'm not sure I want to partner with the Russians in Syria, given what they've done to the civilian population. But it goes downhill from there. Probably the most ridiculous proposal that came out of the meeting was on working together on cybersecurity. As a number of pundits have noted, this is kind of like working with Assad on chemical weapons
or the fox in the hen house.
Or the fox in the hen house. I've been in negotiations with the Russians where you're trying to make a point, and the first thing they want to know is, where's your information? How did you get the information? What are your capabilities? And then cyber, that's essentially, give me all your passwords and tell me how you get this information. Mm. It's just absurd that Trump went down that road at all.
How come nobody else in the room? That bothers me, this idea of just Trump and Putin in the room, no other observers.
I think that was probably Putin's request. Because I think the Russians knew that they could manipulate and move Trump. They've been studying him for years. And I think they would have been a little bit concerned having someone like a Mattis in the room, someone who has a mind of their own and might go a different direction. So once again, Putin came in with an agenda. He got everything on his list, including Trump to walk away from the covert action against Clinton during the election. And we got nothing. I mean, when we walked into that room, our number one priority should have been the attack by Russian cyber personalities against our elections. But number two was North Korea. And there was nothing in the statement on North Korea. Now, Tillerson said they talked about it a little bit, but we got zero traction on what is without a doubt the most important, most pressing threat to the U.S. right now.
Okay. Let's take a call if it's all right with you.
Sure.
All right. We're going to go 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Dan in Albany. Dan, you're on.
Yes. Hello, gentlemen. Thank you. Back when we had the fall of the Berlin Wall and resultant German reunification, Gorbachev was highly concerned about expansion of NATO into the Russian sphere. Secretary of State James Baker said, not an inch. But with the Clinton administration, it did happen, expansion of NATO and, into the Russian sphere. And was that a mistake?
Well, let's put a little historical context on this first. Those countries and even those parts of the former Soviet Union that were under Soviet Russian control, they didn't voluntarily join the Soviet Union. They were there because they were dominated and occupied. So I don't agree with the premise that the Russians have some deus ex machina control over wide parts of Eastern Europe. So let's now look at the individual countries involved. First of all, the countries that were not part of the Soviet Union had every right to either reunify like Germany did or to become members of NATO for their own protection. When you look at the former republics within the Soviet Union, some of those the Western alliance did not invite into NATO, partly because at one time they were part of Mother Russia. For example, Ukraine, Belarusia, even northern Kazakhstan. There was no consideration of letting them in. On the other hand, countries like Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, which had a history of being free and independent countries, we knew that they could not be free unless they were part of NATO. So at the end of the day, I'm comfortable with the decisions that were made. Could we have been more accommodating to the Russians? Oh, maybe so, but I don't think this was some huge mistake.
Go ahead.
I agree philosophically, but would we go to war to protect the Baltic countries?
We have signed a treaty that said we would do exactly that. So
I guess we have to believe it then. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's an interesting question, isn't it? Because you have to go back to World War II. Very few of us were around, relatively. But, of course, the Nazis had been a terrible force, and there were proposals to basically bomb them into agricultural territory, never let them get up on their feet again, and the rest of it. And there were the various zones, and we were going to do everything to make sure that those Germans never did it again. But the premise of the question, I thought, was good, which was, have we forgotten?
I don't think we have forgotten. I think that we bring the historical context into our policy. I should say at least in that 70-year post-war period when we had the U.S. had a bilateral, consistent, coherent foreign policy. We stood for democracy. We stood for free markets. We stood for human rights. And we were able to keep that coalition as we went from Republicans to Democrats to Republicans again. And I think for the most part, we did pretty darn well.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You want in on this discussion about Russia, about what's going on with Putin and Trump? This is the time to let us hear from you. We got about 1,000 emails this morning on the Vox Pop, on the roundtable. So this is your time to be on, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Thank you, Doctor. My comment is that this whole Russian issue is a smokescreen. There's going to be a World War III coming. We know that. Donald says that he wants to be the greatest president in American history, and only wartime presidents were great. And if you read his books, his agenda is to make Washington, D.C. into a theme park and move the nation's capital to New York City. And I think this whole smokescreen is to make everybody look in one direction while they're 1% is making the biggest land grab in the nation's history of taking all the federal lands and just taking them and giving them to Exxon and all his
David,
rich buddies.
David, I hate to interrupt, but do we want to, let's see here. Is there a possibility, Jim Steiner, that we could just answer him in a few words because I have to take a break?
Sure. I think your perspective is just a tad on the extreme side. I do think there are serious problems with the Trump administration. I do think he uses smoke screens, but I think a lot of that has to do with trying not to be pushed out of office because what they did with the Russians during the campaign. The long-term agenda that you lay out there, I don't find that especially compelling.
Thank you very much. Thank you to both. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Blue Sky Bicycles, Saratoga Springs, New York, now offering electric bikes to the Capital Region, featuring pedal assist bikes with test rides available, blueskybicycles.com. Stammel String Instruments, downtown Amherst and Poughkeepsie, providing sales, service, and rentals of violins, violas, cellos, and bows. Restorations and appraisals, open Tuesday through Saturday, stammelstring.com. Bassett Healthcare, providing information on partial knee replacement at educational seminars across Central New York. SayNoToKneePain.com for dates and locations. Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, cnharchitects.com. And Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, providing custom fabrication, commercial casework, and interactive kiosks for trade shows, museum exhibits, and special events, empireexhibits.com.
And we are back with Dr. Jim Steiner. Jim, you know, you have a long history in the CIA and the rest of it, and I think people are very interested in what you have to say. We will go now to Mike in Bennington, Vermont. Okay, Mike, your turn.
Hi, yes. In the recent Putin interviews by Oliver Stone, Putin was asked whether there were any areas where we could agree on cybersecurity. And Putin stated that the Russians had proposed a cyber treaty, but that the U.S. had rejected it. Now, I'm wondering why your guest just dismisses any kind of cyber agreements out of hand when it could be a first step towards a bigger agreement.
Dr. Steiner.
Okay. Essentially, there are two lines of argumentation on this. The first one I've hit a little bit. Working with our adversary on cybersecurity does not make sense when they are our primary country that we're trying to defend ourselves against. Every year, the U.S. intelligence community puts out a global threats to the U.S. national security. If you go back and look at last year's, these are unclassified. You'll see that the number one threat is cyber, and the number one country that we're worried about within cyber is Russia. So the idea of working with the Russians is a non-starter on that issue. Secondly, let's think about treaties with Russia and agreements with Russia. If we sign into an agreement, we tend to follow the spirit and the rule of the agreement. But if you look at what the Russians have done over the last couple of years with a number of treaties, conventional armed forces in Europe, intermediate missile treaty, and a variety of others, the Russians are violating these while we continue to abide by them. So they're not someone to be trusted.
Are you still there? I think we lost them.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go to Peter in Albany. All right, Peter in Albany, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in, ladies and gentlemen, are right now, 1-800-348-2551. Go ahead, Peter.
Hello, gentlemen. I've got a question about the fact that China has been seemingly surprisingly silent as this recent episode has come out, as has the European Union. And I just wondered whether or not you had any comments on that.
Well, it's in China's interest for the U.S. to be consumed by issues in Europe and the Middle East, because that gives China a free hand to do what they want to do in Asia. You know, our walking away from TPP, walking away from any leadership role in Asia, gives the Chinese a lot of running room to consolidate not only as a regional power, but as a world power.
Including Paris.
Absolutely, but, you know, playing a leading role in climate change.
And as a quick follow-up, it just seemingly we become, I hate to use the word pariah because I saw it in the word in the news today, but are we still seemingly becoming more isolated?
Oh, I think absolutely. We are giving away the global leadership role that we've had since the end of World War II. Day after day, drip after drip, we are losing not only our moral imperative to lead the free world, but also our partnerships and leadership position.
Thank you very much. Okay. So, I think we just lost somebody. That's bad. I don't like to do that. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Tom in Taconic. Okay. You're on, Tom.
Hey. I had a question about Russia and Britain, whether your guest thinks that they were involved.
Tom, rule number one is you have to turn your radio off. And the reason for that is that there's a delay between us. So if you're listening on the radio and not on the phone, I'm going to hear it coming back. Okay, thanks a lot. Go ahead, Tom.
Anyway, I wondered if your guests thought the Russians were involved with spreading disinformation in Britain about Brexit. And if that were true, whether the Brits could have a revote to stay in the Union.
That's a very interesting question. I do not have any specific information on what the Russians did in the UK, but if you take a look at the report the U.S. intelligence community published in January on what they did here, there's a good appendix to that report that lays out Russian covert action propaganda capabilities. And these are not limited to going after the U.S., but clearly include going after the West European democracies as well. I'd be surprised if the Russians did not have an active program pushing Brexit.
What do you think, Tom?
I think so. I mean, after what happened here, that was my first thought. You know, because they want to spread chaos and they want to.
They want to bust up the European market, right?
Yeah, they don't want to have a concerted effort against them.
Yeah, Tom, good point. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Okay, question. Thank you. Yeah, bye bye.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's see here. Luke in Troy. All right, Luke in Troy, you're on.
Hey, I really have to take issue with Dr. Steiner here. I'm half Mohawk, Aquanasi Mohawk, and I can name hundreds of treaties that the U.S. government has broken. So what you seem to be doing is pushing your agenda here, and you keep quoting the U.S. government statistics. Well, we all know that they release what they want us to see and what they want us to know, and our State Department can't be trusted either. They're doing as many covert things as anyone else's.
Okay, so doctor, there is an issue here, which is that we don't know what our government is doing. Is that right?
Well, I would.
I'll go further, and I'll say that I know.
Well,
that
I didn't ask you to go further. I addressed it to Jim. Okay, Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, I would take issue with that. I would say having looked at a broad number of countries around the world and then comparing the degree of fidelity to international agreements, I think the U.S., at least since the end of World War II, has been an exemplar. Now, does that mean the U.S. is perfect? No. Does that mean that the U.S. didn't engage in a lot of very expansionist activities, especially against Native Americans? Absolutely. But I'm just saying in the international environment since World War II, especially as it relates to arms control, the U.S. Has lived up to its commitments.
Okay, Luke, go ahead.
I'm going to categorically disagree with everything he just said.
Everything?
He modified what he said. First he said something else. Now he modified it to saying up to World War II. So I can destroy everything he said. And
destroy is a tough word. Destroy is a tough word. It's one I don't particularly enjoy on this program, where civility is the rule.
Yeah, we're having this discussion talking about Russian behavior as a shadow of Soviet behavior. We've been talking completely in the post-World War II context. So I would argue that was implicit in the statements I was making. You have some legitimate points, certainly, about the way the U.S. government behaved, in different times and on different issues. But that's not what we've been talking about.
Well,
here.
Anyway, Luke hung up, and that's typical. Okay, so let's go to, Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Welcome to the program, Jim.
Good afternoon, Dr. Sheratok and Dr. Steiner. From what you told us already, we haven't gotten too much detail in newspapers yet about the meeting between Putin and Trump. But with Trump coming away with none of his points, if he had any in mind, even other than just his own personal attitudes, going into a meeting with another leader, and Putin came away with all of his points crossed off his checklist, I guess that would, the equation would equal out to loser big time for Trump, and he says he hates losers. That would be quite a confounding situation with him having to, with his narcissistic behaviors, start to have to hate himself.
Well, I doubt that's going to happen because that's not the definition of a narcissist.
No.
but
he loves winners and he hates losers.
Yeah, but we don't really know what went on in the room. That's the terrible part.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate
it. All right.
Okay, and now we're going to go to Chuck in Castleton. All right, Chuck, welcome. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Dr. Sheratok, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
With the state of politics, and in particular the state of our foreign relations, the abnormal has become normal. With all the negativity I'm hearing, can you just spend a few seconds saying, how do we get out of this? What's the solution? What direction should we be taking?
Well, if you're going to ask me what direction we should be taking, we should be following the foreign policy that we had a consensus to support since the end of World War II.
Well, that's a very interesting point, Jim, because the United States Senate has certainly voted overwhelmingly to continue the sanctions on Russia.
Well, not just continue them, but expand them and not allow the president to adjust them. But unfortunately, that's now being amended in the House to give them the right to go ahead and agree with Trump's decisions without having to bring the Democrats into the decision-making. So even though that bill on sanctions was approved 97-0 in the Senate, it has not moved out of the House. It's going, we're not sure.
I think you may be slightly incorrect. I think there were two negative votes. I may be wrong about
that. Maybe it was 97 to 2, but 97 in favor.
Yeah, right. Okay. So anyway, Chuck, is yours a philosophical long-range question like the ones we have heard almost every day that are in my email? How do we deal with this guy Trump? Is that your question, or is your question narrowed just to the foreign policy issue?
No, I think it's both domestic and foreign. The abnormals become normal. How do we stop this slide?
It's called elections. In 2018, if I can just jump in here, Jim. In 2018, both the House and the Senate are going to be up for grabs. The real question is, Of the 50% of the people in this country who don't vote, how many of them have been energized? And of that 50%, what number, and I happen to think it's massive, or out of proportion, are Democrats? So if Trump says to black people in America, tell them to vote for me, what do they have to lose? They now know what they have to lose. So I think it has to do with the 2018 elections, because if the House, only the House, goes Democratic, which is more unlikely than if the Senate goes Democratic, then these investigations will not be as namby-pamby as they have been up to now. I think that's your best bet.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll try to keep the optimism.
Thanks, Chuck. All right. And now on to Colin in Albany. All right, Colin, you are on. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me. So my questions and I guess comments were regarding how while the Iran nuclear deal, which I think is a good thing, came about, the media and Democrats were very much pro-peace, but now it seems like they are much more antagonistic on foreign policy now that they're in the minority, and how that kind of ties into the military-industrial complex and the perpetuation of capitalist imperialism. So, just any thoughts or comments on that would be appreciated.
Okay, only because you got me confused. Can you give me the two terms you use there, which I'm not sure went too fast or I'm not familiar with? The definition of...
Capitalist imperialism or military-industrial complex?
I got both of those. Those were easy.
Okay.
Then there was something else you said there earlier, which...
Yeah, I'm trying to understand. You started out with Iran. What's the question on Iran?
Oh, sure. The Iran nuclear deal, which is, I think, a very good thing that came out of the Obama administration. The media and Democrats in particular were very for that deal going through, and I think that's a good thing. But now it seems to have shifted to that now that the Democrats are in the minority Trump does not like the media, the tables have kind of turned in the narrative how things are much more antagonistic toward Russia from both those sides, and how those kind of tie into the military-industrial complex and capitalist imperialism and what your thoughts would be on those or why that is.
Jimmy, you look a little puzzled. Let me deal with this for a second. Is there a doubt in anybody's mind that under Trump right now, the military-industrial congressional complex is more potent than it has ever been up until now, right? I suspect that is the truth. And now they're even talking about extending all of this to more of the people who sell their services, the mercenaries and the others. And has this country always been in the hands of such folks? And is it getting worse? My answer would be yeah. Wouldn't it be yours, Jim?
Well, I do think that there is a movement in that direction now. We might disagree on the starting point, but most recently, in fact, today we saw where the Trump administration asked the heads of two of the largest military contract services.
I saw that.
Yeah, to come up with strategy for dealing with Afghanistan and Iraq. And their simple answer was, well, hire us and we'll send in contractors
and
to fight
we'll
these
tell
wars.
You, and we've had this before.
Yeah. And, you know, that is probably the worst idea you could come up with. Now, the good news here is that Mattis and the Defense Department is not even including those ideas in their set of options going forward. So I would agree there's a lot more pressure now by the administration, not by the institutions, but by the administration to move down this military-industrial complex route. But I do think the institutions know better than this, and they're pushing back. The question is, how long will they be allowed to push back?
Colin?
Yes.
Anything back?
I don't think we've seen, maybe there has been an intensification of the support, at least overtly, in Trump's rhetoric. But, Obama was also very good about hiding stuff kind of behind the scenes in terms of, a trillion-dollar nuclear, more or less revitalization.
Modernization,
thank you. And okay. Also making more, you know, loans available to new nuclear power plants and things, which is, you know, tied to the nuclear arms industry.
Colin,
so,
we got
just kind of like the different perspectives on it.
Colin, we got to take a break. I thank you for your most interesting call. Thank you very much. All right, we'll take a break and we'll come back. We'll talk to Gordon and Bob.
Support for WAMC comes from Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years, the-gazebo.com. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. And the Barn at Egremont Village Inn, presenting Comedy Night with Danny Cohen Friday, July 14th at 8 p.m., and Grupo Mondo, Saturday, July 15th at 8 p.m., open for dinner at 5 p.m., theegremontbarn.com.
Yeah, okay. Okay, we're back. We'll go to Gordon. Hey, Gordon, you haven't been on today, have you?
No, I haven't. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. It was a different Gordon. Go ahead.
Well, my question is this. I understand that North Korea has a population, general population that is very deprived of many things. And my question is, have the government managed to actually develop and build these rockets? I understand a gun can be made. You put it on a lathe. You put a hole down the middle of it, and you shoot a projectile, you know, a couple of miles away, and blow up something. But to actually develop the integrated circuits to put in a rocket to get it to its destination, or are these products that have been supplied to them by other countries? Have they purchased them from someplace else and brought them in or smuggled them into the country to? Be able to have the ability to send these missiles and rockets elsewhere in the world?
Well, unfortunately, they have the capability domestically to produce these weapons, both the missiles and the warheads. You have to remember that we developed an atomic weapon 70 years ago. Time moves on. The science is not as demanding as it once was. The other thing is the designs for a number of the missiles are old Soviet designs from the 60s, which, you know, over the past decades, there have been any number of times that there's been tech transfer between China and Korea and between Russia, the former Soviet Union, and North Korea, both licit and illicit. So they have the capability to do this domestically. It's not a matter of the systems being shipped in from overseas.
And it's not only Russia. It's my understanding that Pakistan has a robust nuclear sales department.
Yeah, there's a fellow named A.Q. Khan who... Yeah. Was an active salesman.
Gordon, thank you for your call. Okay. Now we'll go to, oh, by the way, the telephone number is 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Bob in West Town Lake. All right, Bob, you're on.
Hello.
Yeah,
hi. I'm just calling to try and put a little perspective on the relationship between the United States and Russia. And why Russia really has a fair amount of animosity towards us. Going back a little bit to the time of the Russian Revolution, we had soldiers in Siberia fighting with the Tsarist troops against the communist rebellion.
Okay, what else you got?
We weren't the only ones.
Okay, what else you got?
Secondly, at the time of the Second World War, of course, Stalin kept asking for help from us, and we really didn't supply very much. The Russians lost millions. Of course, they did kill 8 out of every 10 Germans that were killed. Then we confronted them with the Cold War. We then had a confrontation with Cuba. We had a confrontation with Korea. We had a confrontation with Vietnam. And of course, in Afghanistan.
So your premise is, so your premise is that the Russians were the good guys?
No, I'm not saying that.
Well,
I'm
Stalin was not a good guy. Yeah.
I mean, we didn't even recognize the communist government until 1933 when President Roosevelt
I know the history. We know the history. But the question is about now. Is Putin lying? Answer, yes. He's lying through his teeth when he says they had nothing to do with it.
I'm sure they did. And I'm sure that this is just part and parcel of the feeling that they have about us for the last since 1930s and before.
But you have to posit a country in which they are killing their political enemies, imprisoning them, and doing all of that.
We have the right to try and impose our beliefs on other people around the world.
Where's that happening?
Or to try and come to the best deal that we can to protect the United States and to move on.
And what's the best deal?
Well, I think the best deal, I understand, I haven't heard very much about it in the last couple of days, that there has been a ceasefire in Syria.
Well, we can talk about that if you want to talk about that ceasefire.
Go ahead.
Your time is over.
Hold on a second.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. First, let me premise it. You know, I come in here being very much at ease with the basic U.S. foreign policy, which is democracy, free markets, and human rights. That's been our consensus for the last 70 years and hopefully for before that. If you come in with a approach that says communism's the right form of government, then we don't have a common area to work from, and that could be a problem. Agreement in Syria, what you have is a limited deconfliction area in the southwest corner. You may be able to make things work there because that's where you have the Jordanians, you have Israeli concerns on the Golan Heights, and you do not have factions that may go after each other. In some ways, it's so to our benefit. We want to keep the Iranians out of there. We don't want them joining with Hezbollah in there. And the Russians and the Syrians would like some stability there because they really want to go after moving a little bit more in the direct south and southwest, where ISIS controls large amounts of territory, and they want to occupy that territory when ISIS is pushed out.
Are you still there, Bob?
Yeah, I'm still here. And my problem is that democracy has worked for us. Democracy has worked for England and a lot of the countries in the Western Europe that have a long history of Barbara Tuchman wrote a wonderful book called Through a Mirror Darkly, A History of the 14th Century. And she begins to talk in that book.
Okay. Well, we're not going to do. We're not going to do it.
The countries where we're trying to impose democracy have no more sense of what that means than they can fly, you know, by themselves.
Okay. Fair enough. I appreciate your call.
I think that's a realization we have to come to, that a lot of these countries have no history for democracy. And they don't even know what it means. I mean,
wait. I think your point is well taken. One point is well taken, which is we have no business going in and trying to create democracies in other places. But on the other hand, what we're not going to do now is go into Barbara Tuchman's books. Go ahead. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, so now we're going to go to Connie in Albany. Connie in Albany, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have an actual question, and that is, I have a feeling that I'm being gaslighted for sure, because the Republicans keep saying that this is nothing, that this is a nothing burger, And I have no idea how it could be the things that we've seen coming to light involving the campaign's dealings with the Russians doesn't seem like nothing to me. And yet the response from the Republicans is that it's nothing. What's your take on it? I know yours, Alan, but as for your expert, I don't know his take on it, really.
Okay. Thank you for the question. I appreciate that. I tend to agree with you, and I can give you some reasons why you can back up your argument. I would urge everybody to do a Google search on the U.S. intelligence report on what the Russians did during the election. It came out in January. It is unclassified. It's about 10 pages long. And you will see there that the Russians systematically engaged in covert action to sabotage and use propaganda to elect Donald Trump. So this is a huge deal. This is not a small deal. What you have in that report is what the intelligence community does. It speaks truth to power. The problem here is that power doesn't care about the truth. That's what we're dealing with right now. I am one who believes in our institutions. I think that our Congress eventually, I think that the FBI will pursue this matter until the truth is out. It's going to be drip, 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 but we will get there. But the Republicans saying there's nothing here, it's all smoke, that's a diversionary tactic.
Thank you, Connie. Okay, we'll go to Peter in Poughkeepsie. Peter in Poughkeepsie on line number 4. Welcome, Peter.
Republicans saying there's nothing here.
Peter. Okay, you're off. All right, that's the end of Peter because he wouldn't obey the rules. And the rules are you got to talk slowly, you got to talk into the microphone, you got to keep your radio off, and you got to be with it. Okay, so now we'll go to Deanne in Kingston, and there are no other calls after Deanne. So if you want to call me now or call us, it's 1-800-348-2551. Okay, Deanne, on to you.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two questions. One is very similar to the last person's question, which is, what do either of you make of the Republicans, both the politicians and the citizens, who I believe have the good of the country in mind and at heart? What do you make of this mass denial on the part of Republicans of Trump's reckless, bullying, dangerous, unpresidential, damaging, abusive, I would say, behavior? I can't wrap my head around it, and maybe this is more of a psychology question than a political question. That's my first question. My second question is for Alan. What do you think the media needs to do to recover from this trampling of the institution and the shaking of people's confidence?
Okay, go over to you.
Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about your first question. But I'm going to really give most of this to Alan. You know, I'm an intelligence guy. I look at what the bad guys do overseas. I'm not going to try to tell you why the Republicans are doing what they're doing. But what I can assure you is that this administration is doing massive damage to our foreign policy, to our leadership overseas, to our image. And I can also assure you that the way this administration treats Russia is so out of character with the consensus between Republicans and Democrats for the last 70 years that it makes you go, I wonder what's really going on here. On that note, I'm going to turn it over.
Well, there's not much to turn over to me, Deanne, because as you probably know, here's how I feel. I think the New York Times and the Washington Post and Politico and some of the others are doing a terrific job here, really terrific job. And yes, they're in the polls. Their numbers are very low. Nevertheless, when the history is written of this terrible time in America, you're going to see that the press are going to come out the heroes. So I think what they have to do, and I don't know if you have a different view on this, is not to apologize, but to power through. Deanne?
Yes?
Are you there?
Yeah, I think I missed the last couple of words you said.
Okay, they have to power through. In other words,
yeah.
This is not a question of are you popular or not. This is a question of whether or not they are doing the responsible and right thing. I think the New York Times is showing tremendous courage. And I, by the way, have never been a huge fan of some of the things that they do, but I am now. And the same thing with the Washington Post.
But you don't think that the public trust in the media as an institution has been damaged
yes.
permanently then?
Not permanently, no. Not at all. I think what's going to happen is this is going to be over. This nightmare is going to be over. They're going to be seen as the heroes. And their numbers are going to go up.
Okay. And do you think in 2018, I mean, what's your gut feeling on what's going to happen in 2018? I know a lot of things can happen
Depends if the Democrats are in a circular firing squad, as usual. So let's say you got seven candidates or eight candidates now want to run in the New York 19th District against John Faso. Well, you know, it can either be that they beat each other up and they're mad at each other and therefore they say, well, I'm angry, I'm not going to vote for him. Or is the main thing now to recapture the House of Representatives? So I think a lot is going to have to do with the choice of candidates and whether they can put it across.
But, Alan, didn't you say earlier, too, though, that it was the House of Representatives that was, you said, either the more likely, more or less likely to go Democrat. Isn't it true,
less.
Though, that more Democratic seats are up?
Yes, that's certainly true.
In the House?
No, in the Senate.
They're all up. So
everything in the House is up. And in the Senate, you know, you get 435 every 2 years. And in the Senate, the Democrats are at a disadvantage because there are more.
That doesn't bode well for a Democrat.
Well, it may. You may really end up now having what we call a realigning election in politics, which means that people are so fed up. Now, remember, you can't gerrymander the Senate because those are state seats, but you can gerrymander the House, and that's been largely done in terms of drawing districts where Republicans have an advantage. But in what you get a post-Watergate election or a time like this, you really do get what the potential for realignment. People hold their nose, they think the whole thing stinks, and they vote outside their characteristic voting pattern. Got it?
Yep.
Okay.
And also, and I know that you were saying earlier, well, it sounded as if you were suggesting that not a lot of black folks came out.
Proportionally, that's true. We know that.
Okay. So you think they're going to come out in 2018?
I think there's a real possibility. Remembering that 50% of this country doesn't vote. And that the people with the most resources tend to vote in the largest numbers, hence the Republicans, and the people with the least, who are really working hard, are most likely not to vote. However, I do think there's an expanding consciousness that people are really getting screwed. And when you're going to take their health care away from them, I think they'll get out. They'll be motivated to get out and vote.
Speaking of which, do you think that the Republicans are going to manage to get a health care bill through?
Yes, I think that there's a possibility that they will and that people are playing a very bad game here, underestimating what McConnell and the others can do here. I think to dismiss it as dead, I think, is utterly wrong. Hey, Deanne, we got to go. Thanks very much. Appreciate your call.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, a big apology to Demo and Malcolm and Robin, who we cannot get to today because we just went a little bit over on the last question. In any case, Thanks so much. This has been terrific. We're out of time. Everyone who called in, Jim Steiner, the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy at the University of Albany, for joining us. Thanks again. And Jim, I hope you'll come back again. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts, conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care, and health services since 1998. WindyHollowVet.com. Interim Healthcare for 46 years, offering in-home assisted living for individual companions, aides, and nurses, serving the greater Capital Region, Columbia and Saratoga counties, and Glens Falls. IntrimHealthcare.com. Of the Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style old butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com. Colby Attorney Services, corporate formations, documents retrieval services, and court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939. ColbyService.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by No, They Weren't. Our producer is Jim Lewis. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.